paid program does not necessarily reflect the views of News Radio 830 KHVH, its staff, or management.
Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts, ask a question about glaucoma, find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or perhaps you're feeling shy, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air in coming programs. Look us up on the web while you're online, www.hawaiianeye.com. You can find previous episodes of the radio program. You can subscribe to our podcast, and you can get lots of information about eyes at hawaiianeye.com. You can check us out at Twitter also, twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A, no spaces, and facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. We're happy to share our information, what's going on in eyes and at Hawaiian Eye Center on our Facebook page. During the next hour, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ, and we'll have a lot of fun today. Remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. Now, we're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, I can't see through the telephone, so I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's happening in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service, so sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Well, those of you who've been listening closely realize that I've been gone for a little while. This is the first time back in a few weeks. We've had Dr. Stephen Ree from the Hawaiian Eye Center filling in, and I was listening to a little bit of his program from last week. He did an excellent job brought a lot of interesting information and a new voice to the radio show. So I thought that we'd try to get him on a little bit more often. Maybe every month or two we'll have him do a program so that you can hear a different voice from time to time. And I was traveling a bit during that time. I was in Europe, and I was talking to colleagues and meeting with colleagues at different times. And it's always interesting to get an international perspective on what is going on in eye care. And some of the people in other parts of the world have a very different perspective on healthcare in general. You know, healthcare is a big issue. It's a big political issue, among other things. And the politics of how we should be delivering our health care are a big thing that's going to be in the news and in the political campaigns this fall. So I thought what we might do today in the second segment of the program, maybe about 10 minutes or so, is talk to someone from the Hawaii scene here who is active in politics and who knows something about how things work in the healthcare, both at the state level here in Hawaii and at the federal level in nationally. And so we're going to talk to Congressman Ed Case a little bit later. As you may recall, Congressman Case was served as not only a state representative, but also a U.S. congressman in the past. And so he's very familiar with what's going on in the national scene as well as on the local level as far as healthcare and other issues. And he's, of course, running for the Senate position this fall, or actually in the primary just in a few weeks. And so we'll talk to him a little bit later in the program and get his perspectives on what's going on in healthcare in America and in Hawaii as a local issue. Before we do that, though, I want to talk a little bit about something that has come up in the office over the past several weeks that people are seem to be quite interested in. And this is the concept of laser cataract surgery. Now, a lot of you probably think that cataract surgery has been done with lasers for the past 20 years. And in fact, we have not used lasers to take care of cataracts, and there have been no lasers to treat cataracts. Basically, there are limits to what lasers can do because laser basically is light, and using its high energy in the form of light and using highly focused light beams to accomplish certain things. And so we use laser in a lot of things in eye surgery. And we use it for glaucoma, we use it for diabetes, we use it for problems in the retinal holes, we use it for treatments after cataracts, but we haven't in the past used lasers for cataract itself. And the reason is because the lens in the eye has to actually physically be removed from the eye in order to treat a cataract. A cataract is a cloudy lens in the eye, and that lens blocks light getting into your eye, and so in order to improve your focus in order to see better, you need to remove that cloudy lens. And once that cloudy lens is out, then it allows you to see better. And we replace that cloudy lens with a clear lens implant that stays permanently inside your eye. And once that implant is there, for most people, they end up seeing significantly better. So there's no way to remove something just by using light energy, laser light energy. You know, we could disrupt or soften up, or we can't really vaporize the lens in the eye with lasers, because where does that vapor go? You know, it has to stay inside the eye. So there's no way to actually physically remove a cataract using a laser. But what has been done is that lasers have been advancing, the technology for lasers have been advancing over time. So what is now happening is that lasers can be used to assist in certain elements of cataract surgery. And this is something that is in its very early stages of use across the country. There are a number of surgeons now who are adopting some laser technology to help remove the cataract from the eye. And so because this is a fledgling technology, because it's a brand new technology, it's interesting to see how it's going to evolve and be used in the future. Currently, it's only being used for people who want certain types of corrective surgery, certain ways that we may help to reduce dependence on eyeglasses after surgery, much the way you'd use the laser for LASIK or other procedures to correct the vision. The laser can be used in conjunction with cataract surgery or after cataract surgery in order to enhance the vision or enhance the visual outcome. What we found so far is, in my investigation, my talking to people who have done this and so forth, is that I've found that it doesn't offer any significant advantages for the majority of cataract patients. And so given that the technology is expensive and that it results in increased cost to the patient, we have not currently started using or adopting this technology, the laser technology. It's sort of, we're taking a wait and see approach to see how it progresses, what people's results look like. And so it's still very much in the early stages of what we know about what the laser can and can't do at cataract surgery. So lasers cannot do cataract surgery. We don't do cataract surgeries with lasers, but you may hear about laser-assisted cataract surgery. And particularly some doctors who are doing it, who are using the technology, may be marketing or may be promoting this particular procedure. And so you may hear about it on commercials or in articles and things like that. And so this is basically a way of assisting the removal of the cataract using the laser. And it only really seems to be beneficial in certain very limited circumstances and for certain types of vision correction. And there is generally additional cost associated with the use of the laser, which is usually passed on to the patient because it's not covered by insurance. So if you hear about laser-assisted cataract surgery, that's what they're talking about. In my opinion, it doesn't add a whole lot to cataract surgery itself in the majority of cases. There may be rare or occasional cases where there may be some benefit to it, but it is more the exception rather than the rule that this is the case. So laser-assisted cataract surgery is something that we'll keep our eyes on, as it were, and pay attention to how that's progressing or developing over time, and what other uses it's being put to, what ways that it may be used or designed or tweaked to try to improve the way it benefits or the way it helps people who are having cataract surgery. Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll talk about some eye news, and we're going to interview Ed Case about some of the health issues that affect both Hawaii and affect us nationally.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes, can you see me lost?
All right, welcome back, everyone. And here we are in the next segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show. And we're going to spend a little bit of time talking to Ed Case on the air about some of the issues that confront people in Hawaii and people nationally. And thank you so much for coming on the program. Hello, Ed. How are you this morning?
Thank you so much, Doctor. Good to be with you. Aloha to all your listeners.
We're happy to have you on the show, and thanks for being able to join us this morning. I know you're in the middle of running a busy campaign there for Senate, but we thought we'd stay away from politics a little bit and talk a little bit about some of the things that you may have learned during the time that you've been in office. I know you served as congressman for a number of years in the United States Congress, and also locally here in Hawaii, you served 8 years as a state representative. And so I guess you're pretty familiar with some of the issues that face people having to do with health care here in Hawaii.
Well, I think healthcare, of course, is a very, very complex and encompassing area, both nationally and in Hawaii. And so, I don't pretend to know all of the issues. I certainly worked on them when I was in the state legislature and in the United States Congress, and certainly believe that we've got a long road to travel in terms of our overall national goal of making sure that all American citizens are able to access affordable and quality healthcare. So we're trying to accomplish both accessibility and availability and affordability and quality, of course. And we frankly just have a way to go before we get there. And so I think that that's the big picture on the national scale. And I do believe that this is one of really the top five issues that our country faces really over the next 10, 15 years. I think it's going to take that long to get there, assuming we can all come together and try to find the solutions. And here in Hawaii, we have some very, very specific challenges, as you well know, having practiced here. And as I know, because I did represent Hawaii in Congress for over 4 years, and not just Honolulu, but the neighbor islands, the rural areas of our state where where there really is a somewhat of a provider crisis going on, just in terms of the availability, the basic availability of medical care, and especially a specialty medical care such as your profession, where specialists are finding it very difficult to survive, especially on the neighbor islands, and the neighbor islands continue to lose some specialties. And I think that's a real challenge for Hawaii, not to mention on the national level.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think that one of the things that is kind of interesting is that people have in the past have held out Hawaii as a place in which there is better access to care, there's better insurance coverage than in other parts of the country, but I'm not sure that that's the case as much anymore as it used to be. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's unique about the healthcare system here in Hawaii lessons that may be learned in some of the things that are being done on a national level now, the Affordable Health Care Act and so on?
Well, of course, it is true that we have done much better than most of the rest of the country in terms of our state laws in getting health care available and accessible and affordable on a quality basis to many, many citizens of our state. And so when we talk about Hawaii doing better than the rest of the country, that is very much a positive, but it is relative. It is relative. It doesn't mean that we are doing great. And certainly the Prepaid Health Care Act, which has been in effect here in Hawaii, a state law for decades now, was revolutionary when it was passed. And it really continues to be quite an advanced law when you think about it across the entire country, where we essentially do mandate coverage of folks through their employers. That's how we get coverage in Hawaii, combined, of course, with the Medicare availability and Medicaid, which are national problems at this point. We have somewhere around 90-91% of our citizens that have coverage. And that's better than almost every other state. There's only one or two states that are a little bit ahead of us. I think Massachusetts is one of them. And one of the reasons is because they somewhat took after our system when they adopted their own law some years ago. But there are clearly still challenges here in Hawaii. That's still 10% of our citizens that can't get health care. Have no real way of getting it because they're not working, or they're not working over the 20 hours that is required, and they don't qualify for Medicare. So that's a huge gap still. That's 100,000 plus citizens that are living in Hawaii without health care, and I don't think that's acceptable. And, of course, we also have, again, going back to it, the basic challenge of health care being far more accessible in the urban core of Honolulu, really, than when you get outside of Honolulu, where it gets a lot more spotty in terms of getting that kind of coverage. And that comes down to really the operation of Medicare in many cases, and especially in the rural parts of Oahu and the neighbor islands, as well as some of the burdens that physicians like yourself face just in practice, paperwork, facing lawsuits and the rest of it. So we've got a plus here in Hawaii, but that doesn't mean that the job is finished.
Yeah, I think that one of the problems that physicians face, speaking from personal experience in trying to cover the rural areas, is that we are kind of forced to see a high volume of patients because of relatively low reimbursements from Medicare and Medicaid programs, as well as other programs, compared to what it costs us to deliver the care. And so if we go to a rural area, for example, I know that there are certain areas of the Big Island that are very much underserved with orthopedists, for example. So if there's an auto accident or someone breaks their bone or something, they often have to be sent back to Oahu. And I think that's because the volume of care that specialists in rural areas can get is relatively low. And so when they're faced with all of the costs that they have in providing the care, compared with how many people that they can see and how much revenue that they can generate, it's a system that doesn't work financially. And so I think that's one of the issues that needs to be addressed. And I know that one of the problems with the Medicare system is that Medicare is is losing money every year, and eventually it won't be funded adequately to continue to deliver care even at the level that we're at. And a lot of physicians feel that the level that we're at isn't paying them, and the hospitals feel that it's not paying them enough to sustain the current costs of health care. So I'm talking to Ed Case, who has served in Congress as a Hawaii representative, and also here locally as a state legislator. And So I'd be interested, Ed, in your opinions about what's happening with the Medicare program on a national level, and whether that's and what types of things might be available to try to improve the likelihood that this program is going to be around for our children and our children's children.
Well, first of all, I think you're being charitable in terms of your statement of the problems and the challenges of physicians serving our citizens, especially through Medicare. I think that we are really in almost a crisis situation from a Medicare perspective, both nationally and here in Hawaii. And again, I'll go back to inclusion of the more remote and rural areas of our state, where you don't have the critical mass, the benefits of a lot of people, and as you say, have to then service people on a low volume basis. And when that's the case, it becomes especially acute what you are being paid for the services that you're receiving. And one of the main items that we have to get a hold of in the national government for Hawaii is that the reimbursements that medical providers under Medicare are receiving for servicing Medicare patients here in Hawaii are some of the lowest in the country. And that's despite the fact that we have one of the highest costs of living in the country. And this has occurred through a very arcane, very unfair formula that's been applied in Washington, D.C. to calculate reimbursements. It's just turned out to have exactly the wrong result here in Hawaii. There is no reason for us whatsoever to be receiving some of the lowest reimbursements in the country, and this needs to be something that is fixed either within the Medicare system, or if they're not going to fix it, then you know, our members of Congress need to fix it legislatively. So that's an acute problem, because it combined with the sheer paperwork that is required to service Medicare patients, paperwork that is required in some ways because there is fraud and abuse in the system still. But I think they've kind of gone overboard, and you and your fellow physicians well know that the amount of your time, your raw time that is being taken up just in complying with this paperwork requirements is just eating into your patient service, your patient care time, and is frankly exhausting. And so it's no accident that medical providers are opting out of Medicare. And that can't be the case, especially in areas of our state where there's a very, very high percentage of folks that are dependent upon Medicare. That is how they get their health care. They're not working. They're retired. They're poor. They're disabled. And they don't have access through our prepaid health care system. So it's important that we get Medicare right here in Hawaii for everybody. Nationally, Medicare has been a great program. I'll start out by saying that. I think it has been a program, part of the New Deal, that has really saved lives and provided for some quality of life for tens of millions of Americans. And so, I'm not one of those people that thinks Medicare is a bad program. I don't. I think it's a good program, but it is unsustainable on its current financial path, and it's much like Social Security in that way. And the real reason is that. We finance Medicare by people working today and contributing to Medicare, and that money is used to pay for Medicare for those that are receiving it today. And that works fine as long as you have enough people working and paying in to balance how many people are benefiting from it and being paid for their Medicare. But that balance has been thrown out of whack by really the lowering of our population growth rate to almost at zero population growth now. So we have fewer people working to more people retired, receiving, and living longer. And that's set us on an unsustainable path. Complicating that is that healthcare costs in this country, which affect Medicare, are still escalating far faster than the basic inflation rate cost of living. And so we really have to make some pretty tough decisions with Medicare to rebalance Medicare and control those costs and provide a system that is, in fact, going to go. And I'm really happy you framed it in terms of my children, our children, and our children's children, because I don't think this is an immediate risk to Medicare. But it's one of those situations where if you don't make a decision right now, the decision's going to come back to haunt you in 10 or 20 years. And then my children, who are all in their 20s now, will not have Medicare when they get to the time that they need it, and of course their children. So we are trying to preserve a program over time.
Yeah, it's also it's going to be a challenge, though, because of the political climate in Washington and everything else. It's going to be very hard to get a consensus on what actually should be done. And so I think that's the biggest challenge. Whether you end up in the Senate or whoever does, it's going to be definitely a challenge for the leaders and of our country to find a way that we can move forward. And Medicare certainly is a program that has helped a lot of people. And when it first went into effect, I know a lot of doctors were anti-Medicare, and I think that they grew to accept it and to feel that it was a good program. But now there's a lot of physicians, a lot of my colleagues feel that Medicare is a flawed program and that they would rather not deal with it because of some of the reasons that you've outlined. So I think that it's definitely going to need a lot of work. Also in Hawaii, the things that affect us locally, aside from the higher cost of living, is that we have the general excise tax in Hawaii. We're the only state where physicians actually have to pay tax, or you have to pay tax on medical services. But the federal government doesn't recognize that, so the physician actually pays the tax rather than the patient paying the tax on Medicare and Medicaid services. So that's a difficulty that faces physicians here in Hawaii as well. We need to take a short break for the news. We're talking to Ed Case. If you can hang around, Ed, can you hang around till the second half of the, about 2 or 3 minutes after the break?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that.
Okay, and then when we come back, if anyone wants to call, if anyone has any questions for Ed, we're talking about Medicare, we're talking about healthcare in Hawaii. If anyone has any questions, they can call in after the break, and maybe Ed can share his opinions about that. So we'll be right back in just a minute.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is News Radio, 830 KHVH.
It's 73 degrees, partly cloudy in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis. Here's what's happening. Police and firefighters have started the process of entering the booby-trapped apartment of the man suspected of gunning down dozens of people at a Colorado movie theater. Local agencies elicited the help of bomb experts in coming up with a plan to deal with tripwires so they can get in and remove items that could explode. Police say they have now disarmed the tripwire and the first explosive device, but there's more inside. A six-year-old girl is among the 12 people killed in yesterday's massacre at the Colorado movie theater. A relative identifies her as Veronica Moser and says the girl's mother is in critical condition. An aunt says 25-year-old Ashley Moser was shot in the throat and in the abdomen. A man in his 50s was struck by a city bus on Farrington Highway near Hakimo Road in Nanakuli just before 6 this morning. Paramedics, police, and other emergency workers responded. The man was transported to Waianae Coast Comprehensive Health Center in extremely critical condition. He died there a short time later. One lane of Farrington Highway was closed in the area. A woman in her 20s was killed in a two-car crash on the Big Island last night. Not many details known except the two cars crashed at the 91-mile marker of Queen Ka'ahumanu Highway. No word on any other injuries. If you have documents you've been holding on to with sensitive information, you can have them shredded for free today. Hickam Federal Credit Union and Profile Record Systems is sponsoring a document shred event from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the parking lot of Windward Mall. Up to 2 boxes will be shredded free. Island weather, sunny today with a high in the 80s. Tonight, mostly clear, low near 74, and tomorrow, sunny. Currently in Honolulu, 73 degrees. I'm Julia Norton-Dennis.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the Neighbor Islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora. Yeah.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong, was I
Okay, welcome back to the second half of the Hawaiian Eye Show. You're listening to me, Dr. Christopher Tortora. We're talking about eyes. Today we're actually talking about eyes and we're talking about healthcare. We're talking about some of the issues that face the country and the state of Hawaii in the healthcare field. We've got Congressman Ed Case on the line who, of course, has taken an interest in healthcare over the years that he's served Hawaii as U.S. Congress. And we've got you back on the line here, Ed. And we were talking a little bit about Medicare. We were talking about some of the issues in Hawaii. I thought I might also ask you to give us a little summary of what you feel are the important elements that the new Affordable Health Care Act provides us. This is what we call, what some people call Obamacare. And it's actually a very complex system with which has a lot of different provisions, but maybe you could review some of the ones that you see as most important. And also we can take some calls. If anyone has some questions for Ed, we can certainly try to take some calls here. So give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call if you want to talk to me or talk to Ed Case. So go ahead, Ed. I'll let you take it away about the Affordable Health Care Act.
The Affordable Health Care Act is one of the largest reforms in our health care system, really probably since Medicare was adopted itself, and is as you rightly pointed out, a very large and very complex act, which is only a few years old. And like many acts of its scope, first of all, I'm not sure anybody knows exactly how it's all going to work out. There were lots of provisions in it that were provisions that need to be implemented through regulations, and oftentimes in a law like this, the regulations almost say more about how things turn out than the law itself. There were also provisions in there that, frankly, I'm not sure that anybody knows what the full extent of the consequences are going to be out there in the healthcare industry. And, of course, there's parts of that law that were proposed that were not incorporated in the final law. So I think the first thing I would say about the Affordable Health Care Act is that it is on the books. It is constitutional, but I think it's very much still a work in progress and will be with us for some time. And that's a challenge of the next couple of Congresses and presidents. And I will say presidents, because even if President Obama is reelected, his successor in 4 years will have to deal with this as well. The challenge of the Affordable Health Care Act, the goal of the Affordable Health Care Act, was to address a couple of things. First of all, the fact that 40 million plus Americans could not get health care insurance whatsoever. They fell in the gap between, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, and getting available health care through the private system. And that was not acceptable. I believe that was not acceptable. The second was the escalating cost of health care that we've already talked about, especially in Medicare. A third were practices of the healthcare industry, which were really, in my mind, discriminatory and causing many Americans who most needed healthcare to be unable to access healthcare. So that's what the Affordable Health Care Act tried to get at, was to fill in the pukas where people weren't getting insurance, to control costs, and to address some of the practices of the industry that were, you know, regarded, I think, rightly as discriminatory. So, of course, we know about the individual mandate, which is the most controversial part of the law, which essentially requires all Americans to obtain insurance or pay what Chief Justice Roberts refers to as a tax in lieu of that. And the idea of that was to get everybody into the system to pool the risk and to pool the expense, and so that we could actually make it available to everybody. A second part that I think is particularly important that really hasn't been talked about a whole bunch and will affect us here in Hawaii as well is the health insurance exchanges. These are areas where consumers can go to find a choice of of healthcare insurance and healthcare delivery. And they're really meant to try to open up the healthcare market, which has become highly centralized, really. And I think there's some danger in that. And then finally, pre-existing conditions were outlawed. So in other words, if I have a pre-existing medical condition and I go to get insurance, I get my insurance now. I don't get turned away because, you know, I have pre-diabetes or because my mother had diabetes. And I think that those are the key things about the Affordable Health Care Act. But I think, again, it's important to say that there were missing pieces and there are things that we're obviously going to have to fill in over time.
I think the thing that's going to be the biggest challenge with any way that we deal with healthcare is the fact that there are so many people who don't have access to medical insurance just because medical insurance is so expensive. I know as an employer, I have to, in Hawaii at least, I'm required to cover my employees with health insurance. And so we usually shop around to try to find the best deal that also provides good, you know, quality insurance. And it's always a big expense every month when we have payroll. We have not only the expense of paying the employees, but also the expense of the healthcare coverage or the health insurance. And so people who are not employed or people who don't have a significant means or whose employers are not required to cover them with insurance really have very little options to pay for some of these expensive programs. So I think what we're facing in this country, at least prior to this act, is more and more people who are not able to cover themselves, not able to have a way to pay for health care if they have a catastrophic problem. And even, you know, anyone who's had to pay for their own health care knows that even just going to the doctor for the sniffles can be an expensive proposition, you know, especially if you have to get any x-ray or blood test or anything like that. And so it really, the Affordable Health Care Act is really a good name for it, because what it's trying to do is make health care affordable for everyone. But as you say, there are challenges and there are ways that the bill is imperfect. And I think that, I don't know, I'm not running for office, but you can tell me if you agree. And I think that the way that it's going to get better is for people on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, to work together and figure out how they can, you know, enhance how things work rather than fighting about whether this bill should be in effect or should be repealed and so forth, just to try to find the strengths and try to find the weaknesses and improve on those.
Well, I completely agree with you, and that's the second time that we've talked about really a need for a far more nonpartisan approach in Washington. And, of course, I completely believe that. I don't believe that our country is going to face our challenges. We've only talked about one challenge here today, and that's health care. We could easily talk about the challenges of growing our economy, the challenges of physical stability for our country. We've touched upon ensuring and preserving Social Security and Medicare, foreign relations, protecting our environment. I could go right down the list. And these are all major challenges for our country that are not getting solved because of hyperpartisanship and because of deep divisions and because of a kind of a take-no-prisoners attitude by both extremes in Washington. And the number one challenge for our country is to solve our challenges, if you really want to put it that way. And the Affordable Care Act is a perfect example of that. Because the way that this is really being played out in Washington, both before and after the Supreme Court's decision, is that one side thinks that the Affordable Care Act is God's gift and nothing can be changed and nothing can be improved, and the other side thinks it's the worst thing that ever came along, and they regard it as both sides regard it as an all or nothing proposition, and so there's no win-win in that. And we know at this point that, in all honesty, that the Affordable Care Act is constitutional. It's very unlikely it's going to be repealed, and we need to make it work. And so this is a perfect place where a little bit more nonpartisanship, a little bit more bipartisanship could really improve the lives of millions of Americans. I've in my other life, besides my political career, I've had a very full career in the private sector as a lawyer, representing folks and businesses and their dealings, and I've also run both of the businesses, law firms that I've worked for over the last 30 years, and so I've had to do what you had to do, which is to deal with healthcare costs for our employees. One of the law firms that I worked for had a couple hundred employees, and the other law firm had 30-40 employees. So healthcare was a major part of our expense, and you talked about shopping around. the problem, one of the problems with healthcare in this country is that it's not competitive enough, so that when I shopped around, it was a little harder to find that deal. The market forces were really not operating. And we have that problem in Hawaii, where we have a highly centralized healthcare insurance and delivery system that I don't think has always served us well. And of course, that's a matter of state law in part. But these health insurance exchanges that I talked about in the Affordable Health Care Act can, in fact, help, I believe, to open up the industry a little bit and introduce a little bit more competition so that I can find the kind of plan that I need for my employees and that I can make work for my business.
Well, it makes sense. Well, I appreciate your sharing your thoughts and sharing your opinions here on our program this morning. We're talking to Ed Case, who's giving us some insights into some of the programs both on a national level and a local level that affect healthcare and affect our health. And I wish you well. And if you do end up being our representative at the U.S. Senate, good luck dealing with the gridlock in Washington.
Well, thank you so much, Doctor. If any of your listeners want to get in touch with me directly, I'm at www.edcase.com. I'd welcome your questions and comments and advice.
Okay, thanks for participating in our program today, and we'll talk to you again. Aloha.
Okay, aloha.
So that was Congressman Ed Case, who, of course, is running for a U.S. Senate seat, but he also has served time as a U.S. congressman in the past and is well versed in some of the legislative issues that affect us both here in Hawaii at home and in the national arena. So thanks to Ed for joining us on the program this morning. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll do a little bit more eye news. And if you have any questions about eyes or about anything else, feel free to give us a call.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
Down in the hollow, playing a new game.
All right, welcome back, and you're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, and this is the last segment of the program, so if you did have any questions, now's the time to call. 521-8383 is the number to call us at. We've been talking a little bit about healthcare in a more general way, not so much about eyes, but it's been interesting for a change. But let's talk a little bit about some eye news, some of the things in eyes that have been going on. And we're talking in the beginning of the program a little bit about cataract surgery and how lasers are used in eye surgery and how lasers might be used to augment cataract surgery moving into the future. And in some places already are being used to some effect, but not for the vast majority of people, no real benefit yet of these laser surgical procedures. I have an article here about macular degeneration, a common problem. People can lose their central vision as a result of macular degeneration changes. And so there's a study here that we were looking at that says new onset of wet macular degeneration should be treated immediately. When we talk about macular degeneration, a condition that affects the central vision, causes people to lose central vision as they get older, usually known as age-related macular degeneration, because it's more common in people over 60, 70 years old. And there are two forms of macular degeneration. It's what's called dry macular degeneration, and then there's wet macular degeneration. The reason wet is called wet is because there are abnormal blood vessels involved, and so blood being wet is referred to as wet AMD because there's blood or bleeding in wet AMD. So this is a form of macular degeneration that tends to occur more quickly, more rapidly, to cause a more rapid onset of vision loss. And so it needs to be treated promptly. So the study says this retrospective review evaluated whether the time elapsed between the onset of disease symptoms and treatment with ranibizumab, which is one of the injectable treatments for this condition, affected visual outcomes. It says the 45 patients were divided according to how long they experienced visual symptoms before treatment. So there was 1 month, 1 to 6 months, or greater than 6 months. While all patients showed improved vision, patients experienced symptoms less than 1 month had a significant increase in best-corrected visual acuity compared with those for a longer duration of macular degeneration. So it turns out that there actually was some benefit to getting that treatment in early. So what does that mean? Well, that means that people out there who may be at risk for macular degeneration ought to be aware of what the symptoms are so that if they do develop symptoms, early symptoms of wet macular degeneration, that they can get in right away to see the doctor and get the treatment initiated promptly so that if they can get treated in less than a month from when the treatment initiated, or the symptoms initiated, I'm sorry, then that means that they would have a better chance of improvement of the vision over time or maintenance of good vision. And this makes sense because as it goes on, macular degeneration tends to damage the tissues and it tends to cause worsening or weakening of the vision over time. And so if you have a macular degeneration in its early stages and you can treat it and arrest the progression, then that means that you're going to be more likely to be able to prevent a more serious permanent loss of vision over time. So what are the early symptoms? What are the early signs that people might find of macular degeneration? Well, it doesn't cause any pain in the eye. So if you're having pain or uncomfortable feeling or tearing or anything like that, that's not macular degeneration. Macular degeneration is a painless process. It also it pretty much affects only the vision, and people who have macular degeneration will notice certain types of changes in their vision associated with the central vision. Age-related macular degeneration affects your center vision. It does not affect the peripheral vision. So loss of side or peripheral vision is a different problem. It's not macular degeneration. Macular degeneration affecting central vision, what does that mean? Well, central vision is what we use to see words on a page when we're looking at a printed page, to see the hands or the digits on our watch when we look at our watch, to see the features of someone's face when we look at someone's face. All of these things require fine central vision. Also, being able to see the television clearly, recognize things that are going on TV, read the subtitles on the TV, all of those things involve central vision. Distortion of the central vision is the hallmark of wet macular degeneration, particularly distortion that comes on suddenly. That's a new change. And the easiest way to see this type of distortion generally is in looking at straight lines. Things that are normally straight lines can become distorted if someone has macular degeneration, and that distortion would generally result in the line, instead of looking straight, would look kind of wavy or curved or a little bit irregular in appearance. And so the straight line of like a door edge, the edge of a door, might look slightly wavy or slightly irregular. It might look like the top of the door is not entirely straight when you look at it. So this distortion of the central vision is a typical sign of macular degeneration, and particularly if you're over age 60 and you notice a change in the vision where the vision looks distorted, when you're looking at a printed page, things don't look as good, then those would be symptoms that you'd want to get checked out right away by your eye specialist. Macular degeneration tends to affect one eye at a time, but it can affect both eyes pretty close to the same time. So unless you compare one eye with the other, you may not notice the symptoms right away. Sometimes what will happen is that people will develop symptoms in one eye and their vision can get quite blurred in one eye and they don't notice it because the other eye is taking over and is seeing pretty well still. And so with both eyes working together, they don't notice the change or the distortion in one eye. So not a bad idea if you're concerned about the possibility of macular degeneration to look at things that have straight lines like the edges of doors and windows or the anything else that has a long straight line. Look at it with one eye, look at it with the other eye. And if you do see any distortion or irregularity of that straight line, that's something that you should be concerned about and check with your doctor, eye doctor on a prompt basis. We have another article here about the progression of cataracts following vitrectomy surgery. Certain types of problems in the retina, including diabetes, bleeding in the eye, and even certain forms of retinal degeneration or macular degeneration can mean that retinal surgeons will need to do surgery on the back of the eye. And the way this surgery is generally done is by removing the gel inside the eye called the vitreous gel. And it's done through special instrumentation to remove this vitreous gel and then to do surgical procedures on the retina itself. When this is done, the removal of the vitreous gel seems to have some, the vitreous gel itself seems to have some impact on the health of the lens inside the eye, because removing the vitreous gel tends to cause people to develop cataracts over time. And it's never really been quantified how cataracts develop after vitrectomy surgery. But if you haven't had a cataract removed and you have vitrectomy surgery, the likelihood is that you'll need to have the cataract removed within some period of time after that vitrectomy surgery. Could be a few months, could be a few years, but the progression of the cataract is likely to be sped up after that vitrectomy surgery. It's not a big deal because removing a cataract is not a huge issue, but it is something to be aware of as one of the potential side effects of surgery. So it says here, researchers used Schlemflug image analysis. That's a certain way of looking at images with a certain instrumentation to quantify progression of nuclear lens changes among subjects enrolled in a prospective randomized controlled studies evaluating the benefits of vitrectomy with or without autologous serum for idiopathic full thickness macular hole surgery compared with observation. So they treated these macular holes in one group of patients, and in another they just kind of observed them and saw what happened. At 6 months, the increase in nuclear density, or cataract, was 24 times greater in the surgery group compared with the age-matched controls. They observed no correlation between age and the rate of cataract progression. So this was a measurement that suggested very strongly that cataracts do progress within a matter of months after vitrectomy surgery. So something to be aware of if you're considering vitrectomy surgery. The retina specialist can do great things with this type of surgery. They can repair holes in the retina, which otherwise would cause very serious problems, holes in the macula, which otherwise would cause serious loss of vision centrally. And so the surgery is very good. But one of the potential side effects is development of a cataract. So oftentimes they'll say, you're going to have this procedure, and then in a few months you're going to need to have your cataract removed. All right, well, we've been here now for an hour talking about eyes and eye care and general health care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank Mary Jane for helping out here in the studio and say thanks to all you listeners for making this show work through your calls and through your letters. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us. And if you learned something new, listen again next week. If you have questions, you can always email them to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Don't forget to check out our website at www.hawaiianeye.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Dr. Tortora. And we're also on Facebook, facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. Well, sure, been a pleasure talking with you. I'll keep my eyes peeled for you and hope you'll keep an eye out for us. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. Thanks for listening and aloha.
You've been listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Coast to Coast AM, weeknights at 7 with George Norrie.
The whole universe is accelerating and speeding up.
On KHVH Honolulu,
Hawaii's home for Fox News.